if you are managing HIV in most cases mm-hmm. as a chronic illness now, and if many of the services are the kind that someone could get in a hospital, a clinic, a medical care center of almost any kind, does it raise the question of whether AID Atlanta and other organizations like it have in a way been the victims of their own success, that you might not need those standalone institutions anymore?
It does, and it's being asked. I mean, Washington, our legislators in Washington are asking that question, especially in light of Obamacare. I mean, does it necessarily still have to exist in light of the ACA? Because
and ACA patients, is the Affordable Care Act.
Yep. Yes, absolutely. So we're all living in the shadows of that question. And so this past year, do you have an answer to it yet? No, we don't. If you are an ACO, an ASO, an AIDS service organization, and you have not begun to look at your own transformation, you should start looking at that now, because in a couple of years, you will have to look different or you will not be around. And so AID Atlanta, thank God that we started that process last year, and we started to look at how do we diversify ourselves, not just because we want to destigmatize HIV, we want the disease to look like any other chronic illness, but we also need to sustain. We're a 33-year organization that really needs to stand on our own 2 feet.
It's a blunt question, though. What would be the need for AID Atlanta anymore in an era when the stigma isn't what it was? It's probably not disappeared, but is not what it was. And also, a lot of the providers in the general sort of healthcare realm have been aware for years of how to treat some of the complications of AIDS.
Well, I disagree that the stigma is not still around.
Yeah, and I didn't mean to imply it was gone.
Yeah, okay. No. I mean, here in Atlanta, we still have organizations that refuse to treat people with HIV, so they will refer them to us or to Grady Infectious Disease Program or those programs that are deemed as AIDS clinics. And so our thought here at AID Atlanta, as we're looking at our model, is that if we begin to expand our services to provide all primary care, that it doesn't matter who's sitting right next to you. It could be an HIV patient. It could be a diabetic. It could be a heart patient, a cardiology patient, a pregnant woman, or what have you. You don't know. But they're just receiving primary care.
And this in an era when many of the primary care providers are actually consolidating. You're, in a sense, expanding into their realm. So how do you say, okay, we can offer you what you can't get there?
Well, I think we, our ability to provide sliding fee scale, our ability to have a lower overhead. So for every insured patient that comes through our door, we're able to provide 1 to 2 patients that do not have insurance services here. So our model is a little different than it would be at a private physician's office, for example. We have our own pharmacy here. So we have a 340B pharmacy. And 340B means that we purchase our drugs at a very, very high discount from the pharmaceutical companies and from wholesalers. So let's say an antibiotic, Bactrim, normally costs about $3,000 in the wholesale market. We buy it at $600. We bill it out at the wholesale market price, but we only buy at a certain amount, and we get a margin of about 62%. That margin, we are required by law, because we are part of 340, mm-hmm. is to take those dollars and put it back into programs. And here at AID Atlanta, we use that to cover stopgap medications. For example, if someone comes in and doesn't have a prescription drug program, or their deductible is too high for the prescription drug and it's an essential product, we will take some of those dollars and pay for their copay mm-hmm. and their deductible. So we have the flexibility here to do that, because we are a safety net organization here. And so I think that's what makes AID Atlanta unique, and that's what makes our model a little different than going to a private physician. So if you go to a private doctor's office, they're not going to be able to have those types of financial models that we have here at Aid Atlanta.
On the subject of drug costs, there was an agreement by the AIDS Drug Assistance Program for hepatitis C treatments to help cover the costs mm-hmm. of this new treatment, which promises what amounts to a cure for a lot of people mm-hmm. with a type of hepatitis C. But the cost of that is like wholesale $80,000
$84,000 to $89,000
per treatment. Mm-hmm. So if you are co-infected with AIDS, what happens to you? And if you're not, what happens to you?
Well, if you're not, it's a difficult... Well, a lot of the drug companies, if you're not, have patient assistance programs, which allow them under certain financial criteria to receive the drugs for free or at some kind of discounted price. Again, we here, through our 340B, are allowed, you know, we're able to service them through that discounted pricing program. If not, I mean, it is a very, very expensive product. The positive part, you know, the positive out of all of it is that it's a 12-week treatment program that costs about $89,000. The negative is the cost of it all is just very, very expensive.
Because, well, hepatitis C can certainly affect anyone.
Correct.
Certainly the people, of many of the population are
correct.
People who already have difficulties who are economic or physical.
Correct. The age group in which it mostly affects are the baby boomer population. Mm-hmm. In that population, in most cases, they've already receiving Social Security and they have their Medicare insurance plans. But we are seeing it more and more in the younger populations, especially IV drug users, et cetera, which are in most cases uninsured. Those populations and those communities tend to be eligible for the PAPs or the patient assistance programs that are being offered by the drug companies that have these drugs. Here at Atlanta, we have been funded by the state to do hepatitis C screenings. Oral screening. So OraSure has created a product similar to the HIV OraSure oral swab, and we've been doing that project. Just recently started it in December, and providing the treatment through either the patient assistance program or through ADAP. Now, those patients that are in ADAP HIV co-infected, obviously we put them through.
And ADAP is the drug assistance program.
AIDS drugs assistance program. We're able to get their drug through the Ryan White Part B AIDS drugs assistance program. But it has been a difficult road for us that are non-HIV to try to get them on, especially the criteria for the patient assistance program for Hep C, except for one particular drug company, is pretty difficult. So there's been a lot of lobby from specific groups and such to be able to relax those PAP guidelines and eligibility guidelines a bit.
So do we have a lot of people who have hepatitis C who could benefit from this treatment who simultaneously can't take advantage of a drug assistance program and on the other hand can't afford the drug themselves?
You know, I can't answer that. I'm not really sure. We know that the state of Georgia, at least what's been reported, the state of Georgia has a very low incident rate of hepatitis C, although we think differently. But so far reported by the Department of Health, the incidence of hepatitis C in this state is low. We haven't had too much of an experience with it yet, so I can't really give you from our experience here in Aid Atlanta. We've had a couple. So far, we've been successful in getting them on the program and into treatment, as well as down in Noonan. So I can't really give too much information about difficulties, but I know anecdotally, because I'm on the hepatitis C advisory panel for the state and participating in the phone calls, especially those that are coming out of the incarcerated, being incarcerated, et cetera, that population has had a very difficult time acquiring treatment in jail and after getting out of jail.
So what's the risk to public health here?
There's a great risk to public health. In Atlanta, the access to hepatologists, that have the ability to deal with patients that have decompensated livers is very, very difficult. And then having them put on transplant lists and all those types of things, you know, obviously the risk of infection to others, especially if they're using with other individuals, et cetera.
You're talking about drugs, then.
Drug use,
intravenous drugs.
Yeah, intravenous, yeah. Yeah, drugs. Sexual contact, that's very, very low risk. So in women, you know, if they're still of childbearing age, of course, you know, you have that, the risk of transmission. So in general, I think the public health risk for us is just the costs that we have associated with if they become decompensated, the risk of the, you know, the amount of cost that it is to take care of a patient that is Hep C is very costly for us.
Turning to Obamacare.
Yes.
The state is trying to move HIV-positive patients who don't have full-blown AIDS, as I understand it, to Obamacare.
Mm-hmm.
But does that leave a lot of single men, who are a big part of the HIV-positive population, in a difficult position because they can't qualify for Medicaid, and yet they need the kinds of treatments that we have now?
Many levels to the question. The bigger problem that we have with Obamacare is not just the access. Access is easy. You can sign on, you receive your, you know, your premium cost. In most cases, a lot of the patients that we treat here are, cannot meet the cost of the premiums. Now, there are programs through Ryan White and through some of the HIV programs through the city and through the county that are helping them pay for some of those premiums. But then comes those very high deductibles. And then comes the tiered drugs, that the tiers in which the HIV drugs are in within each of the plans. And they have all
really complicated.
Becomes very complicated. And so we feel, and we have a movement in some states like Florida have sued the insurance commissioner, and I think the state of Georgia is moving towards that direction. We certainly have taken it to Congress.
The goal here is to get more people covered for those drugs
and to
under Obamacare and lower the deductibles.
Deductibles, because most of our patients live under the federal poverty level, and they cannot afford it.
So does that mean that there are a lot of particularly single men who don't have full-blown AIDS who are falling through the cracks?
Even those with full-blown AIDS. I mean, there are many people with full-blown AIDS that still are not approved for Medicare or disability for some reason, and we still have to cover them under Ryan White.
So are we going to see organizations like Aid Atlanta, individuals, taking the state to court over this?
There's currently a group of individuals who are working with the Harvard Law Project in considering our options here in the state of Georgia, similarly to how they did in Louisiana and how they are doing in Florida.
Where are you with the state on that at this point?
We haven't interacted with the state yet. We're in a stage where we're working with the Harvard Law Project, and we're supposed to be receiving some feedback from them. We had some interns here do some work and some interns in some other organizations, and we've submitted that to them, and they're supposed to be synthesizing that and getting that back to us in the next couple of weeks.
Someone from the state might say, look, you know, we are already facing exploding costs for health care in the state budget. How could we afford to do this as well?
We've seen in those states who have, you know, who have elected expansion of Medicaid, we have actually seen reduction of cost in health care. And that has been proven in New York. It's been proven in Pennsylvania. It's been proven in California.
But part of the reason for that success is that for now, the feds are picking up a good chunk of the costs.
Correct.
And the fear among state officials is a few years out, that goes away. And the state could be on the hook for very high bills down the road.
But when you look at the state of New York, the savings that they have made reinvestments. In the event of that happening, they have just reinvested it back into their own coffers so that they are safe and secured for that in the event that that does happen.
I wanted to take a look for a moment at where we are in the AIDS battle. A few decades ago, this was a death sentence. Then came the time when there were therapies that gradually got more and more, I don't know, I want to use the word comfortable, but less burdensome. And there was a sense among some of the advocates at the time that people were getting complacent. Is that still true? Are we seeing younger people with higher rates of infection because they weren't around in the 80s? They didn't have the horrible evidence of what AIDS could do to you right in front of them all the time.
Absolutely. I can't give you the specific number, but in 2014, we had the highest rate of young people come back with positive HIV tests than we've had in years here at AIDS Atlanta. And we know across the country, between the ages of 13 and 24, there has been over a 20 to 30% increase of HIV infection in that particular population.
Is that because younger people are, they don't, again, don't have those lessons of history and they're engaging in riskier behavior, or are there other reasons?
I think they don't have the history. They didn't see what you and I saw, you know, in that era. And I also think they see, you know, someone like Magic Johnson, like, you know, he looks healthy, he's a multimillionaire, you know, everything looks great. And there's also this element of, you know, they're coming, get tested, and if you're positive, there are drugs out there that could keep you living forever. And when you open a magazine, you know, you know, and they're promoting an HIV product, you see this very healthy looking person. And so it's sometimes we have been our own kind of enemy. And overall, I think prevention dollars have been cut so dramatically, and we have so medicalized HIV prevention. Like nowadays, every grant that we write for prevention is tied back to medical. So if you are not part of a medical environment and you're doing prevention, you won't survive.
At a time when you're having to reimagine how an organization like AIDS Atlanta functions, could you find yourself, not going all the way back to the 80s, but facing demands that you haven't had to face in a while and for which you've had to adjust?
No, we are going back to the 80s. I mean, we are in that space. And I'm sorry to say that, but we are here in Atlanta. We have rates here in Atlanta of HIV that are higher than in sub-Saharan Africa. We have rates of HIV infection in the United States, in pockets of the United States, that are higher than in Africa. There are more success rates of prevention of HIV in areas of Africa than there are here in the United States. And so for us, our concern is that every year prevention dollars get cut. The good thing is we now have this new tool in our arsenal of prevention, which is called PrEP. Now an HIV negative person has an ability to take a pill every single day and also use that as his or her arsenal to prevent HIV. But it has to be taken every day right now, and it's a way to prevent HIV from transmitting from a person who is positive, that may not know their viral load, that may not know that they're even infected, and protecting the person who's negative. So because of that, I think we're now moving more towards a biomedical form of prevention until we find that vaccine.
What's your guess as to where we'll be 5 years from now in the fight against what is still, for some people, a killer?
I really don't think that we're going to be in that different of a space. I think medically we'll be different. I think that the access will be different. I don't think that in terms of incidence, we're going to be any different. And until we start fixing the issues of work access, education, poverty, transportation access, et cetera, that's not going to change. Because it's not, you know, HIV is not just a sexual disease. It's a disease of environment. It's a disease of a social, you know, it's more of a social stigma disease than anything else. So once we start fixing what's around it, it's when we will start seeing decreases in the virus by itself.
Dr. Jose Rodriguez Diaz, Director of AIDS Atlanta, Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for inviting me.